Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
The schools in the 60s, girls with long hair wanting to be Joni Mitchell, Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young, Abby Hoffman, throwing stuff in the park. But here's something, Chicago Teachers Union and Jesse Sharkey, this is not the 60s. This is 2019. All right, it's not the 60s. But what did he do? He holds the teachers out for another day, another weekend, because he wants to do civil disobedience. And why do you want to do civil disobedience? Because Trump's coming to town. So the idea is, let's keep the kids out of school for another day so Jesse Sharkey can wear costumes of the 60s, play the Saul Alinsky act, disrupt people, and, raise his national profile. While Democrats running for president are coming to Chicago, supporting the union, and sticking a knife into the back of a liberal Democratic mayor who won 70% of the city. Politics has no friends and no enemies, only permanent interests, Jeff Garlin. And they're stabbing Lori Lightfoot. I think it's kind of unfair. I also think it's kind of unfair. Okay, look, I love teachers, and I'm married to one, and my son is one, and I'm not against the teachers. I just think the CTU leadership is a little, I don't know, Maduroista, you know, like Venezuela, like the delegation they sent to Venezuela to say Maduro's such a great guy. I think that's nuts. But then, you know, Eddie Johnson, superintendent of police, who's got his own problems that we'll talk about later, has announced he's not going to go to listen to the president make a speech, President Trump, making a speech at the International Association Chiefs of Police that will be here in Chicago. That's the president of the United States, and he's not going. The union's pushing back on him, saying he should go. And you know what? I'm just going to rely on history as my guide. Because many years ago, there was another president being impeached, and this was a real deal, not just political. Real crimes were committed. It was open. It wasn't done in a secret star chamber. The Congress of the United States was about to get rid of the president. And who came to Chicago but Richard Nixon, that president? He was alone, a lonely man then. And you know who went out to meet him? And Superintendent Johnson and everybody else should remember this. Who went out to meet him? Richard J. Daley, mayor of Chicago. And they said, and the reporter said, why are you going out to meet Nixon? Why are you welcoming Nixon to Chicago? Why are you going to O'Hara Airport to welcome him? And you know what the mayor said? He's the president of the United States. That's what you do. And that's what you do. Office is one thing, politics is another. Separate the two sometimes. Lori Lightfoot's doing her best. CTU's not doing its best. Not the teachers I'm talking about. I'm talking about the leadership. Everything's up in the air. We'll talk to Paul Vallis, who knows something about schools, and Scott Wagspeck, alderman of the 32nd Ward and honest chairman of the Finance Committee of the city of Chicago. Jeff Garlin is here with me, executive producer of the Rokan Show with Anna DeVellantis. And I'm John Cass, husband, father, syndicated columnist of the Chicago Tribune and member of its editorial board. And remember Littlefinger? You know Littlefinger? He could have been a Chicago politician. What did he say?
Look around you. We're all liars here. And every one of us is better than you.
Well, they are. This is my business. I know. There are liars, and then there are real liars. And part of it is, if you really want to lie, you know what you do? You don't even write about it. You ignore it. Get who's writing this and that and see who's not writing about the teachers' union strike. Who's ignoring it? Who's pretending that it didn't happen? It did happen. 300,000 kids were out. Their parents have to find daycare. It's not easy. But nothing's easy on the Chicago way on WGN Plus.
Chicago is a union town.
Look, the Chicago way is a deep cultural phenomenon.
In a tower by the river, there lived a man. There was a man who took a stand. With pen and paper in his hand, defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso. In a tower by the river, Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago way.
The next speaker is Mr. Richard Zuplis.
Excellent. Hello. Our city is broke. Please, no new taxes. Instead, can we please reduce the budget by 20%? And create an ordinance that mandates a balanced budget. Doing so will eliminate our deficit and provide a surplus to begin paying off our debt. No matter how much we pay our teachers, the students will not receive a decent education unless their parents are involved. I have volunteered in the CPS classrooms for the last 12 years and have found that the only, and I mean only, difference between the students who are doing well and the students who are not doing so well has to do with the degree of involvement that the student is receiving at home. All it takes is 10 minutes of one-on-one reading, 10 minutes of one-on-one writing, 10 minutes of one-on-one arithmetic every single day starting at the age of 7 to 14. CBS recently reported that the average CPS teacher currently receives $71,000 a year, and that had the CTU accepted the mayor's original proposal, that the average teacher would then receive $100,000 per year in 5 years, plus their 50% benefits package would total, on average, each teacher costing us $150,000 per year. They're not broke. Please take back your overly generous offer and present a contract that reduces the excessive pay of the highest paid teachers by placing a salary cap for all teachers. They can still be paid well, very well, and receive a cost of living increase in pay determined by the yearly rate of inflation. When the CTU refuses this offer, then bring in teachers who will accept this offer. Be fair. Pay the teachers well. I love the teachers. I do. And they will come. Just please be sure, no matter what, pay them a whole lot. I don't care. Just please be sure to underscore the importance of one-on-one involvement with our students. This is the most important part. Either by the parents, someone else at home, or if necessary, one-on-one involvement by interns and or other students at the schools. Please be sure that the new librarians are actually IT coordinators. And let's please do away with summer vacation. Year-round school will keep all of our minds sharp.
Wow, that was commentary at the city council meeting where Lori Lightfoot introduced her budget, which is really kind of a stitch-em-together hope for the best. Hope Pritzker and Madigan saves her behind budget. We're going to talk budgets, money, the money you pay. The money comes out of your pocket, or if you come to Chicago and you want to buy a meal, the money that you pay in taxes for that meal, there's one guy to talk to. Paul Vallis, candidate for mayor last time, the Dailies and the Joyces did not want this guy to get anywhere close, so they tubed him by running themselves. cutting out that Southwest Side Irish vote for themselves. And I guess they're okay with Lori Lightfoot there because when she, you know, if she has problems, they can, I guess, get one of their grandkids to come up, maybe Patrick Thompson Daly or somebody to come up and be mayor. Paul, how are you?
I'm fine. I don't think Mayor Lightfoot's going to kowtow to the Dalys or any of their relatives.
Yeah,
you know her as well as I do. She's, yeah, I think she's the real deal. She's just in a very tough situation, and it's not made any easier by this teachers union who are just grandstanding and are punishing poor kids.
Now, to remember, Paul Vallis ran the Chicago public schools for years when they were in the black. He handled the teachers union pretty well. They got along with him. Teachers liked him. He was even sent to the schools as an exile from City Hall, Jeff
budget Carlin, director.
When he was the budget director for Daly, because you know why? You know why he was? I'll give you some Chicago way insight.
Please.
I'm having some fresh air downstairs in the City Council annex, you know, the back room where aldermen eat their beef sandwiches. And there's a picture on the wall of George Washington getting a payoff. You can see his hand sticking out, like he's got his hand sticking out, like, you know, put some cash in there. All of a sudden, Pat Hewels comes up to me, alderman of the 11th Ward then and Mayor Daly's floor leader, and says, "Hey, what's with that Greek friend of yours?" And I'm like, "What Greek friend?" And because I don't have any. And he said, "Vallis." I said, "What are you talking about?" And check this out, Jeff. Pat says, "Every day he's asking the mayor at the cabinet meetings, why are we buying all this salt from Melrose Park? What's going on with this? We don't need all this salt." And the mayor's responding to him going, "I don't know why."
And the hoisters.
And the hoisters and the guy, all the guys getting paid overtime to move that salt.
Sure, and store that salt.
And, you know, in Melrose Park, you got what I mean? How you doing, Chicago Way, Grand Avenue? You understand now? But Pat didn't have to say that to me because I already knew it. Mm. And he's like, "Will you tell him?" And I'm like, "I'm not going to tell him anything. I'm not going to advise you guys. I'm a journalist. I'm not advising." Well, guess what happened? Paul gets moved out to the schools.
Which was then considered Siberia.
And it was a disaster when you moved.
Yeah, but we made Siberia bloom. You know, people forget that. Well, first of all, we had labor peace for 6 years because the teachers union had great leadership. And, you know, Jim Francik, who's actually negotiating that contract right now, everybody says, "Oh, you negotiated a great contract with the teachers union." Well, I didn't negotiate it. Jim Francik did. And I'm probably going to doom Jim Francik for saying nice things for him. Mm-hmm. But I met with the teachers union, Tom Reese and his team. And they were Jackie Vaughn lieutenants. You have to remember, this was...
was tough, too.
And she was tough as nails. And they had an agreement. They had worked out an agreement, but Francik was used to negotiating what he felt was a fair agreement and then having City Hall nix it or delay it or drag it out. And I took one look at it. I did my usual 5-year projections and I said, "We can afford it." And I accepted it. And within 3 weeks, we had a contract. But I did it conditional that we set up the type of relationship where every month we would meet what I call continuous strategic bargaining. So in between contracts, we would always resolve issues so that when the next contract season came around, the only issues would remain the financial issues. And because we did this, and because they were immersed in the budget process, I would not submit my budget to the board until I had submitted my budget to the teachers union leadership so that we could look at what the resources we had. Yeah. The whole idea was to bring long-term stability to the district because the district had lost 114,000 students from 79 to 1995 when I came in, and we needed stability and predictability. And so we were able to negotiate contracts in a timely manner. We never had a strike. No one ever wanted to strike because kids get punished when you strike. You know, when they say they're doing
Let's look at it now. We've got the mayor of Chicago in a very tight spot. After you left, when there was nobody to tell him no, Rich Daly decided to say yes to Abu Dhabi and send all our parking ticket money over there. He went crazy. He buried the city after you left. He buried it. Rahm didn't really do much. He tried, but he really didn't do much.
They also did Renaissance 2010, which totally destabilized the system. This idea that they're going to go in and close 100 schools not guarantee that the kids could return to those schools when they were reopened. What it did was it stunned the communities because some of these kids simply did not return to the district. And that was a disaster, too. But, you know, the,
well, they've lost 75,000 in the last, what, 5 years?
10 years.
And with the strike, they're going to lose more.
And so we have a strike now. Let's get to the present. People want to know. We've got a strike. We've got Jesse Sharkey, the champagne socialist. I guess he's the heir to the one of the great cruise lines of the world. He's got a lot of money, which I love it when socialists have money. Because then it's not other people. And they're still spending other people's money. And so he's running, as we speak, he wants civil disobedience on the street. He's holding these kids out for teachers out for another couple days at least. What do you make of it?
Well,
position is Lori Lightfoot in?
Well, you know, first of all, he knows that he's already got a financial winner. I mean, if you remember, Lori Lightfoot accepted the arbitrator's recommendation on the salaries. I mean, you jointly select the arbitrator. She doesn't handpick the arbitrator, and so he knows they're going to get their. On the average, 25% salary increase over the next 5 years. Within 5 years, under her proposal, teachers are going to be making $100,000 a year. So he knows that. So he's already won. So there's nothing to be lost for him to stick it out even longer. What he wants is he wants a three-year contract with the same financial benefits so that he can hold her hostage in the election year. And then he wants 4,000 additional union employees. He wants to hire teachers to reduce class size. He wants to hire support staff. And look, you know, the teacher ratios need to be improved. There's no doubt about it. But, you know, you also have to look at how you're deploying existing teachers.
Well, do the math.
Too.
How many students?
That's the thing I want to
hit. 25,000 teachers.
I mean, you break it down, it's 13 students per teacher across the district.
Yeah.
Now, I know the schooling thing is that we've got schools that are empty. We've got schools that are really great, and they have selective enrollment, and then they become hard pressed. How do we fix that part?
How are the teachers being used? How are they being deployed? How are they being assigned? You know what I mean?
I mean, what I hear from a lot of teachers, they say that our classrooms in these great schools, you know, they look at a month out from the school year, they say, okay, well, we're at the average. We've got 25 students in the classroom, but then 2 weeks before school, all of a sudden, there's this huge surge of kids who are trying to get into these schools, and the principals say, sure, and then they cram kids into classroom, and that's how we get these 45 kids in a classroom.
Yeah.
How do you fix that? Do the principals have too much power?
And then it becomes a staffing. It becomes a staffing issue. And what we always used to do is we would hold a core group of teachers in reserve so that we could dispatch teachers if enrollment was much higher than projected. What we never did was if enrollment was short, we would never take the teachers out of the classroom because we didn't want to destabilize the classroom. All right. So for this year, we got to eat it. But we always assumed that there was going to be some financial impact over having classes that had very, very low class sizes because, you know, we didn't want to remove the teacher and disrupt the classroom. And we would always need teachers that we had in reserve that we could dispatch to schools that had excessive class sizes. Taxpayers need to understand this and rank and file teachers. 2 years ago, the city council created a new property tax levy for teacher retirement that puts $500 million a year into the teacher retirement system. Now, by comparative purposes, that's $150 million more than TIFs take away from the school. So this whole idea of, TIFs are taking money away. Well, guess what? The city council just gave you $500 million. Incidentally, no other city in the state contributes to its local pensions. You know, the state does. No other city.
The Chicago?
That's right. Chicago does.
How much?
$500 million.
But I mean, in terms of the taxpayers pick up, they put in 2 or 3% of their money, teachers. Taxpayers pick up the rest of the percent, right?
Yeah.
It's like ridiculous. Why are taxpayers paying that extra money? Shouldn't they kick in?
And we had this, John, before you got shut down, we were talking about this. I've had talked to teachers who've been in the system for a few years, and their complaint is that the new teachers being hired are having to pay $250 per paycheck into their retirement.
And the reason they're doing that is because, as you know, you cannot change the Constitution to impact pension benefits. I mean, if they just changed the Constitution to adjust the cost of living increases, they would solve a lot of the state and local problems. I saw a statistic the other day that said 70% of the money spent either directly or indirectly for the police department has gone into pensions, the increases. So my point is clearly pensions are an issue. So what the state did was, because they can't change existing pensions because of the Constitution, they changed the pension laws with respects to new employees, tier two employees. So individuals being hired today will probably ultimately pay more than they'll ever get back in return. So that's where the complaints are coming from. The point that I want to make, though, is the city has stepped up to the plate for the schools. They're not only giving the majority of the TIF surplus revenues this year to the schools, but they're also spending $500 million in property taxes to basically foot the bill for teacher pensions, which freed up it freed up actually close to $400 million because the district still puts some money in, a little money, for other things. And then, of course, the Pritzker budget gave the Chicago Public Schools, what, $350 million? So the point is they've been investing in schools. And what Lightfoot has offered them is a very realistic, practical, maybe over-generous financial package. Now, they want to lock in class size reduction, and they want to lock in support staff and libraries. And I like the individual who testified that basically said, if you're going to hire librarians, hire tech coordinators. Right. Really, I mean, let's be sensible.
Don't just
here.
Hire some state legislators' girlfriend.
Yeah.
Okay.
These libraries need to be high tech centers at the end of the day. But you know, let me tell you the risks involved. First of all, you have a city that's taxed at the max. And clearly, she's trying to minimize property tax increases. Her budget is trying to buy her time to develop a longer, I believe, I'm not a mind reader, but I believe she's trying to buy herself time with this budget to develop a longer-term plan for the city. You're not going to solve the problems in 6 months. But the state budget is based, it's like a house of cards. The state budget is based on what? The state's long-term financial plan is based on a tax increase, so-called progressive tax increase that has not been enacted because the voters haven't approved the constitutional changes. It's based on casino money. It's based on sport betting. It's based on cannabis.
It's based on hopium.
It's based on, it's like addictions.
It's based on never having to pay your bills.
Exactly. And so that budget is perilously balanced. What happens next year if the state finances go under? I've already heard that they've already told agencies to prepare to cut across the board 6%. Somebody told me the other day.
That's without a recession.
What happens if the city doesn't get an increase in funding that the new state aid formula, which gave the city a windfall last year, demands? What happens if the state has to cut funding? I mean, if the budget collapses and Ron and Pritzker doesn't get his progressive income tax approved, he may have to initiate rounder type cuts. What are the teachers going to do? What's the teachers' union going to do? Because I don't want to criticize teachers.
Of course.
What are they going to do? They're going to give back their salary increase. They're going to delay their step increases. They're going to pay more into their pensions. So what Lori wants to do, what the mayor wants to do, I believe, is she said, look, I'm going to raise teacher salaries. I'm going to make these salaries as competitive with any district in the country. And they are.
A little bit more.
They are.
Yeah, right.
They are. And look, you know, we're in this like almost financial death spiral. It's getting harder and harder to live in this city. Even when you make a decent salary, so city workers demand more at the bargaining table. They give them more, and then we raise taxes. So it becomes like a cycle.
Yeah. Right.
So at the end of the day, she has said, look, I'm going to make progress on class size reduction, and I'm going to make progress on adding support staff, which she did. Let me also indicate that she's providing salary increases, benefit increases for non-teachers, too. You know, the SEIU employee, comparable. And let's face it, those, you know, they're paid a lot less than teachers. So she's trying to be fair to everybody. But basically she's saying this, don't lock me in to hiring 3,000, 4,000 more people because you're going to destroy the budget. You know, because I've got to address an $800 million city budget deficit. I got to keep cops on the street. I got to fill my police vacancies. I've got to provide critical social services. And so this is really irresponsible. And when you strike the fourth week into the school year, in a district where 85% of the kids are poor, where they're dependent on the city, on the schools for breakfast and lunch, and contrary to popular belief in certain circles, the vast majority of Chicago public school parents are working parents, but also the majority of households are led by a single parent. They can't afford to take a day off. So all you're doing is punishing these kids. And you're almost going to throw away 4 weeks of instruction, because when you suddenly pause and create stressful situations and then take a week off and so that you can strike, or in the afternoon, you know, go have cocktails and then put it out on Facebook.
Oh, my God. I mean, give me a break. Mimosas. We're talking to Paul Velas, former mayoral candidate. He ran the and governor candidate. He should have won. But you know what? Democratic Party, in their wisdom, all the bosses, they wanted Rod Blagojevich, and they got him. And bosses also did not want Paul Velas to be the mayor of Chicago. So the Joyces and the Dailies ran and took away those key Southwest Side votes that would have been critical in building a candidacy. Rahm must have loved them for that.
Well, the good news is they did elect somebody who's independent minded.
There you go.
Absolutely.
And
so
you know
at,
what?
At the end of the day, and that's why I endorsed her the night that I had my concession speech at the end of the day.
Another reason why I like you, because I like Lori Lightfoot. I think she's an honest broker, and she's a woman of integrity. And she's a breath of fresh air for mayors in Chicago. And she's been given a terrible, terrible hand. On one hand, she's got trying to stitch the finances of the city together with glue and spit. And then she's got the teachers union beating her up. And she's a liberal herself. And they're devouring her like the Venezuelans devoured the zoo animals in Venezuela. And then on top of that, you've got every presidential candidate
coming
into Chicago, supporting the teacher strike against the progressive mayor who's trying to do something for the city. With all that, what do you think, Paul Velas, about all that, about where the mayor is now and all the stuff that's going around?
Well, you know, I don't think the mayor's going to budge on the financial parameters, because there is no more money. And she's not going to jeopardize the city budget that she's trying to get a handle on. And again, she's going to get a lot of criticism about the budget that she's introduced, but I really think that her approach is sound, and I think she's buying her. Like she said, look, I want a 5-year contract, and this is what she said, because there are issues that need to be worked out financially, and if I can have 5 years of stability, what do you get? The city is declining because we're not growing. The reason I left the school district with $1 billion, almost $1 billion in cash balances, and no closed schools, sorry, contrary to popular belief, and a fully funded pension system, was because our enrollment, after 15 years of decline, grew by 10%. And when it grows, you get more money. When you get more income, you can do more things. So she wants to buy that 5 years so that she can work out the long-term problems, and she can begin to create the type of stability that's needed so enrollment can begin to grow again. And it's a really sound approach. And I think at the city level, she doesn't want to shock taxpayers again, and she's buying this, she's trying to buy herself some time. Even the request that she's made from Springfield, she's not asking Springfield for more money. She's asking for permission to do some things to generate more money. You know, real estate transfer tax on high-income home sales, is a lot fairer than raising property taxes across the board or straightening out this goofy
casino
bill.
What's a high-income home when it's a $250,000 bungalow? It depends on what you call high income.
I agree. But the proposals that have been out there, and I don't know specifically what legislation they're pushing. We're focusing on like million-dollar homes like that. So I don't know where it'll ultimately end up. Look,
those million-dollar homes, I'm just telling you, in the city and the suburbs, that were $1 million in August are now $799.
Or just $999.
Look, this state has lost population. The property values have declined since 2008. I mean, if our property values, residential property values in this state had grown at the rate that they've grown nationally, the city would be generating close to $800, $900 million more in income, in revenue, just from that fact. And look, this is why this posturing on the teachers' union contract is so idiotic. You know, all you're doing by forcing the city to raise taxes even higher, and by destabilizing the school so that your enrollment drops, is you're just driving people out of the city. In 1970, 50% of the city's population were middle income. Today, 15% are. And if you took away the residency requirement that requires what, close to 100,000 workers from all the school district, all the agencies, the airports, whatever the accurate number is, I'm sure somebody will say my numbers are off. But if you took away the residency requirement,
so they could live outside the city.
So they could live outside the city. That 15% would probably be 7 or 8%. Think about that. 42% of the city used to be low income in 1970. Today, 64% of the city is low income. I mean,
they don't pay taxes.
But they're driving out the middle class. I've seen numbers as high as 350,000 black middle class residents who have left the city, and that's killing the neighborhoods. That's destroying the neighborhoods. We're taxing our population is diminished, and we're taxing that population more and more and more.
What do you think of Lightfoot?
I think she's very capable. I think she's assembled a good team. I'll tell you, I think her financial team is sound. I think the budget that she's introduced is, I'm not a mind reader, but if I was looking at that, mm-hmm. clearly there's going to be adjustments along the way. And I hope some of the more learned city council members who have a deep understanding of finances will make some specific proposals. Like, she's going to get hit by the Affordable Housing Coalition saying, well, real estate transfer tax should go to affordable housing. Well, you could do three things to balloon affordable housing here. First of all, you could remove the obstacles for the conversion, for the creation of garden units. You create 175,000 affordable units literally overnight. That's right. And number one. Number two, you could put a moratorium on these tax delinquencies and let people stay in their homes. Let the city take an equity share in exchange of property taxes. You know what I mean? So people stay in their homes. Now the city's building up an equity fund that they can use to help support other things. And take those tens of thousands of homes that are vacant and let the city take those homes, turn them over to community contractors and developers, and take an equity share in those homes when they transfer the homes. Let them put the homes back online for affordable housing. The city would actually make money, and you would provide tens of thousands of additional affordable housing units. So you don't have to spend a lot of money to expand affordable housing. You just need to have the right policies. So I think she's going to get, she's going to get some pushback on certain things, but I think she's trying to do, I understand her strategy, and she's trying to buy herself time, but I don't think in her wildest dreams, particularly when she literally, without any real deliberation, embraced the arbitrator's recommendations, that she thought that the union would strike or that they would continue to strike.
Why are they striking?
I thought they would be reasonable.
You've dealt with a lot of CTU people and the unions, and a lot of them like you. Why are they striking now? What about this leadership? Jesse Sharkey, Champagne Socialist, doing civil disobedience, Jeff Carlin. Civil disobedience training as we speak. What? What is that? Like, if you had kids doing civil disobedience in schools, you would put them. You would give them time out.
Well, because the
in my day they would
they're a protected class. Apparently, I mean that's the mentality. They're using civil rights era type tactics
because they think it's the '60s. But here's the problem: the kids that they're hurting, the kids that need to eat, and as a father and a husband of teachers, I will tell you that teachers take, and this is why I don't criticize them individually. They take snacks, like they get snacks, at school, right? Betty took the snacks and gave them all to the kids, but all the extra she would save. You know why? Because on Friday, she'd give them to the kids that didn't have dinner or food over the weekend because somebody has to feed them. What is with the CTU doing this to black and brown kids? And here's the question, Paul Vallis. Why isn't the mayor or the Democrats, because this is a blue state and they run everything, there's a day without Republicans, that's where we are. Why aren't people making that argument that who you're hurting are black and brown kids?
Well, you know, and look, I'm not here to be the mayor's designated defender. I'll make constructive criticism on the budget if asked.
Right.
I'll ask
you.
Public safety, things like that. But, you know, she is not prone to rhetoric. Look, I knew the teachers were going to strike against Rahm Emanuel. I think I was in Bridgeport, Connecticut at the time doing a school turnaround there. Front page headlines, Sun-Times. Teachers got raises and kids got the shaft. Remember Rahm Emanuel? And right. I said, right there, teachers are going to strike just to send that guy a lesson.
Right.
You know, you don't, and that, because that was the epitome of disrespect.
That was the FU moment.
Yeah, she's
Karen
just
Lewis.
Not, it's like no drama. There's no drama with her. It's just a matter of fact, straightforward. I think she's talked about the need that you're hurting the kids and that you're punishing the kids. I think she said that. But she's trying to ratchet down the rhetoric while the union's trying to ratchet it up.
One last question before we go. Paul, Lori Lightfoot was in the Tribune editorial board, and we talked about, she was talking about her budget. And I said, why didn't you combine the Department of Streets and Sanitation with the Department of Transportation, since they're both doing streets? And cut out, like, I don't know how many millions of dollars in terms of redundancies. Mm-hmm. And she didn't do it. She said, well, we were thinking about it, but we'll... It's like, it looks to me like one of those things that she's saving down the road.
Yeah, you know, I think, look, she's had a short time to get this budget together, and she inherited a bigger deficit, which I talked about during the campaign than she had anticipated. So I think she's trying to buy herself time. I don't think she's afraid to reorganize. I don't think she's afraid to go after the special interests, you know, at the end of the day. I mean, she's mayor of the city of Chicago. When people say, oh, we feel sorry for her. No, we ran for this job. We knew. We ran because we felt that Rahm was ruining the city. So we knew whatever we inherited would be a challenge. So I think she's trying to buy herself time to address these issues. And I think that'll be a good proposal to consider in your in the second budget.
Paul Vallis, full disclosure, my friend, and also former candidate for mayor, and I hope you come back, all right?
Well,
and we can talk
you.
About the old days on 111th Street when we were kids, riding that bull, watching the girls ride the bull at Riley's daughter.
Or going up and down the elevator in the Gately People's Store. I remember we pressed the button too far, and the doors opened, and there was old man Gately, who escorted us personally out of the building.
All right, Paul. We'll see you next time. Thanks.
Teacher's pet. I wanna be teacher's pet. I wanna be huddled and cuddled as close to you as I can get.
That's the lesson. We're guessing your best day.
Teacher's pride.
Now we're talking to the first honest chairman of the City Council Finance Committee in my lifetime, Alderman Scott Wagspach of the 32nd Ward, a progressive who, like Lori Lightfoot, mayor of Chicago, is being mugged by reality. I just had to say that because that's the cliche about, you know, conservatives, right? A conservative is a liberal mugged by reality. And here you are. First,
goes both ways.
Right. First, let's talk about the teacher strike. I know that you're the budget, you're the finance chairman, but you still deal in these same issues. What do you make of the teachers still going? Lightfoot has given them an amazing offer, and I'm not criticizing the teachers themselves because I'm a husband and father of teachers. I know what they go through, but I question the leadership a little bit. What's going on with that civil disobedience and all that?
Yeah, I want to make sure I don't misspeak. I realize that they've been working very hard at the table to, you know, try to get to some resolution on what they want and what the mayor has available. And I encourage the right for labor to strike and to put forth their issues. I mean, I've been doing that for the 12 years that I've been in. Sometimes when we run into financial situations we don't like, we have to work harder to figure out how to fix those things. And I know that the mayor gave them a pretty good offer in terms of the salary side of things, but their issue is still class sizes. And I think the social workers and nurses that they need in a lot of the schools throughout the city. So I think the mayor is trying to figure out a way to work to get those people to the table, the nurses and the social workers, but there's not a plethora of them out there right now, and we need to figure out how to hire more, but also find more that want to work in the CPS system.
Okay, now can we turn on to the city of Chicago, corporate side, the budget side? You're the finance chairman of the City of Chicago Committee on Finance. What do you make of her budget?
Well, I think it's a pretty good budget for what I've seen in 12 years. I mean, under Mayor Daley, under Mayor Emanuel, we never had anybody challenge Ed Burke on issues like workers' comp or all the financial insider trading that he was doing, everything that has been indicted for, and that's probably going to come out. Those are things that the last two mayors that I've known in my lifetime working with the city should have challenged and never did. And I think in part because they were also benefiting from the largesse of the city and, for either, deals that were being made or programs that were being created. And so there was always this detente between leadership where they were like, hey, you've got your little fiefdom, I've got mine, let's go our own ways. And seeing Lightfoot come out, tackling that issue right off the bat and then going right into this budget has been refreshing. And I think taxpayers, we're frustrated because we look at budgets like this and we say, well, actually I want this to happen with the money or I want this. But when I look at the overall picture here, Rahm Emanuel left office and said, hey, everybody, I left Chicago with a $97 million budget gap for this upcoming year. Well, that was a total fabrication. We have an $838 million one, and we were telling people last year at this time that there's no way it could have been 97. Did I know it was going to be 800? No, but she's doing what she can with the sandwich that she was given.
We just talked to Paul Vallis, Paul, mayor, and he said he kind of gave Mayor Lightfoot some good points on this, what it seems like from the outside, what she's trying to do. Is get through this year, give herself some time so she can begin to stabilize the problems that Rahm Emanuel and others have left her. Do you see it that way?
Yeah, I think I do. I mean, I know we're going to have some other critical issues coming up. We have pension payments that we're obligated to pay. We have some other issues that have been languishing for many years. I think she's trying to tackle a lot of things at once. Paul, I think, would, when you look at what he was offering in terms of what, could be done with the budget, I think he had some good ideas that are sound principles in terms of government financing. Government financing just, it doesn't work quite the same way as big business, but those ideas that we're putting out there are things that were being ignored for many, many years. And I think fixing the structural issues, that's key here. And the good thing is that the rating agencies see that as well. They don't look at the one-off things that are going to be fixed in this budget as long-term viable options, but they do want to see the city tackle these structural issues that haven't been done in the past. And I think Paul was looking at that when he was running. I think other candidates were, but the fact that we have this mayor now, Lightfoot, who's actually implementing those ideas, is critical to the health of the city.
And Scott, pardon me, a lot of what the mayor's fixes for this require partnership and help from Springfield. But
that's true.
The fear though is that those things aren't going to happen because they don't have any strong leadership that wants to work with us. It seems like as a city. What happens if those things don't materialize and they're stuck holding a bag full of debt?
Well, I think first they have to look at in the finance office. They have to have other options on the table. The final option is property taxes, and she's doing everything she can to avoid that. So I think what you're hitting at is that if we don't get the real estate transfer tax passed through the veto session or spring, that they won't have another $50 to $100 million, and that might require something of a property tax hike. Now, there is a property tax hike in this budget, and it is for the libraries, though. It's keeping the libraries open over the weekend, and I think people utilize the libraries enough. Yeah. They know that, you know, we don't have the fines and fees anymore for books, so I think people are okay with that.
They should be open on Sunday. People are off on Sunday. Kids should be able to go to the library.
Yeah, and I think that's a lot of what people would say, that they would agree with that. But I, you know, Jeff, what you're hitting on there is if Springfield doesn't, I wouldn't say cooperate, but if they don't look at us as interdependent, you know, the folks in downstate, in Springfield, with Chicago, and I know that there's been a dislike for Chicago politics and Chicago governance for a long time, but I think they might have somebody here who is finally changing the system or breaking down the system that most people in Illinois want to see change. So I'm just hoping that the legislators in Springfield look at these structural changes and say, hey, we're going to try to help you here. And the casino and the marijuana / cannabis, that's already, you know, the casino might need some changes to it to make it more profitable across the board. But that's something that they can work on as well.
Okay, I got two questions. The first, we had Lightfoot, Mayor Lightfoot was in the Tribune editorial board the other day, and at the end of it, I said something like, when we were leaving, I said, are these mics still hot? And some readers said, what were you saying? But anyway, that's what I said. But in the editorial board meeting, I asked her about these structural changes she wants to make, and one thing I suggested, perhaps I shouldn't suggest, but I remembered that years ago, Rich Daley took the Department of Streets and Sanitation. He created two departments. One was the Department of Tony Pacciullo that allowed for the mayor's friends to pave all the city of Chicago, Mike Tatum and other people, Tony Pacciullo, his brother, the big scandal, no one, you know. They didn't care because people didn't care because I guess he was a white guy and he was a Daley and they thought he was bringing stability instead of financial ruin to the city. And I suggested maybe you could merge those departments since they both do streets and sand. They both do streets and put them together and save a lot of money in redundancy, right? A lot of money. Can't that be done? Do you ever think about that? Did anyone ever bring that up? Or that anger the how you doing guys too much?
It probably anger a lot of people, but I think it, you know, the fact that she's merging technology department and facilities department, I think is important. Most cities that are, you know, bringing this emergent technology are merging those types of departments. It makes them more efficient. People can track what their facilities and what their resources are. That's a good first step. That one is probably, the one you're talking about is probably a much heavier lift and would probably require them, you know, another year or so to look at and see if it's feasible.
But she could hold it out. She could hold it out when she's talking to Springfield.
Yeah.
She could hold it out like in behind the scenes talks, because this is a Chicago way, where she's talking to people and she says, I'm not going to buy an alderman's vote. Right. But yeah, she might need to buy a state senator's vote. And maybe, you know, let those people know, right?
I mean, that's a way. I think, you know, the rating agencies look at this stuff, too. Everybody is kind of looking to see what those other structural changes are. I think it might be something feasible.
Yeah.
You know, she's also merging these administrative functions of police, fire, and OEMC. I think that's a huge one.
Huge.
We've been talking about that one for years. Mm-hmm. Like, why do you guys have an HR department when we have this massive HR department? And each department has its own staff. The water department does, and we've been talking about that for years. So that was a good sign to see her say, we're going to merge these functions. We'll get more police officers out on the street. We're going to bring more in.
Those cops who are house cats don't belong on the street. Let's be real.
No, they're going to have to be retrained or do something else. But I think it's important for people to know that, you know, these kind of changes, they're difficult, but they're very necessary at this point.
One other thing as we close, you opened this interview by talking about the past chairman, Ed Burke, and what you think he might be indicted on, or more coming in that investigation. And it's a large investigation. Now we see the FBI moving into the Madigan Electric, which is really the Commonwealth Edison. And it's going all over the place. You know, it's a huge
The tentacles are long and...
Right.
Yeah.
But where do you see, to enlighten the listeners here, where do you see Burke's problems legally, if any, with respect to workers' comp? And what, you know, because that was under finance, a fiefdom under finance for years.
Yeah, and I want to make it clear, you know, we moved that out of the finance committee yes. very quickly. And I also want to say, you know, we went from, at one point he had 70, 80 employees, and I'm down to just a handful. We're trying the zero-based budgeting. We cut our staff by $1.4 million just in the finance committee. So I'm trying to make do with just having three of my own staff versus, I mean, I could use more, but a lot more than that. And I think just looking at the whole gamut of things there, there could be issues that come up in workers' comp. You know that I think your own Jason Meisner is reporting about the 40,000 pages of documents that the feds have, not yes. to mention 100 media discs, and that could be volumes and volumes more of information. You know, I also mentioned programs and projects, so the Friends and Family Plan. There's so many tentacles that reach into so many different areas that the feds, I think, have kept it pretty close to the vest, and we really don't know what's going to be out there, but it could be things that we just didn't expect.
Last question. I personally like Eddie Johnson. You know, coppers always hate their boss, okay? That's just part of the deal. But he kept the police department in some kind of stability after Laquan McDonald. But at the editorial board meeting, I asked Mayor Lightfoot, quote, when is Eddie Johnson out? And maybe I shouldn't have asked it that way, but I wanted to be specific, you know, so they tried to leave no wiggle room there. She supported him. Talked about, she kind of gave him a vote of confidence, even after he was found to be slumped over at his, you know, in his car. And I understand all that, but sooner or later, and what she didn't want to talk about, Scott, sooner or later, the video of the body cameras of the police officers are going to come out. How does that affect him, and where do you see his future?
Well, I think a person in leadership like that has to show the highest example, and it is very difficult when you're stressed out as he is about the violence in the city and issues that police officers are dealing with day-to-day and communities. But I think I've found it very difficult to, you know, continue to show strong support for somebody. I think perhaps they're in a situation where they're looking for what is the other leadership in the department and who can step up. But, I don't think it's appropriate for, someone like that to brush it off. I know it's under investigation, but it can't be brushed off lightly.
No, but when the body cams come out, he'll be subject to ridicule.
I don't think he's going to be able to withstand the need for him to look at that both internally in the police department and personally and say, you know, I can continue on. And I don't know the circumstances, though. I mean, we don't know the details. I think you're right about the body cams, and that's why officers wear them, to show a little bit more of the truth of what might be the situation. So
payback.
I think the mayor just has to be, I think she's being careful about how she approaches it, but, you know, if it were somebody else, maybe that's not as critical right now to the police department or to another department, they might be gone.
Scott Wagsbeck, I have to ask a question because of my son, Spiro and Peter. They demand this answer from you. Are you going to join us as a season ticket holder like you did for many years at the Chicago Fire games? Are you going to be at Soldier Field and maybe the club section, you know, the second tier. That's where I'm claiming the second tier in the front row, you know, on midfield, so I can see the game.
That's a good spot. And, you know, we got the original tickets. So I had to buy a couple extra for my boys, but, to try to get to games. But, yeah, I'll be out there. We're not giving up hope yet. And it seems like a new day for the Fire. So I'm happy about that. Just new owner, new direction, maybe a new coach. I don't know.
I think the finance committee of the Chicago City Council should subpoena Joe Mansueto and demand that he answer questions about the left back and the right back. Can you do
there
that,
you
please? All right. Thanks.
Someday if I meet him, yeah.
Oh, okay. You hear that, Mr. Mansueto? The finance chairman of the city of Chicago hasn't met you. It's time you go knock on his door. Thanks a lot, Scott Wagspach, chairman of the city council's finance committee. My liberal friend, but I still like you, man. I'll see you.
All right. Thank you, gentlemen. See
you. Bye-bye. Thank you.
Before we go, I got to tell you something. I had an editing problem in the morning before this thing was done. Two paragraphs in my column about what would it be like without Republicans was garbled in editing. And we were trying to fix it. I was on the phone with people, and it's been fixed. It's ancient history now when you hear this. But I did not get to read the questions that I asked you to ask of Scott Wagspach and Paul Vallis. So I'll do that again, and we'll get it done, okay? I will read your questions to the guests. I think that's a good thing. Put it out on Facebook and read your questions to them. And if you like what you're listening to, you know what I need. You know what we need, Jeff Carlin and I. We need you to go on iTunes or wherever you find podcasts, subscribe, write us a kick-ass review. I've seen a little 4.8s, and that's bothering me. I need 5.0s. All right, so we can keep this thing going and make it grow. Love you guys. For Paul Vallis, former candidate for governor, Blagojevich, former candidate for mayor, Lightfoot won, but the Dailies killed him, and so did Joyce. And he should have, you know, he would have been a good mayor, but I think we already have a good mayor now, too, in Lori Lightfoot. For Scott Wagspach, chairman of the city council's finance committee, you talked about Eddie Johnson, and I might have to use that in my column. For Jeff Carlin, executive producer of the WGN AM Rokan show with Anna DeVolantis, who had me on the air to talk about Joey Lombardo and that beautiful dinner we had almost together at Bella Notte on the west side. And for me, John Cass, husband, father, two most important things. Columnist for the Chicago Tribune and a member of that newspaper's fine editorial board. Chicago is at a crossroads and Illinois is at a crossroads. You pay taxes? Thanks for listening. See you again next time on the Chicago Way on WGN Plus.